Just a heads up, the Razzball Baseball Podcast might not be for all audiences. You have been advised.
You like fantasy sports and sarcasm, then I show my man your muscle, start to spasm. It could even call some of you to orgasm. It's the Razzball Podcast. Well, you have several choices, only one joke in your sin, I'm already a Moises. You might be yourself, just like your name was Moises. It's the Razzball Podcast. It's the Razzball Podcast. It's the Razzball Podcast. It's the Razzball Podcast. It's the Razzball Podcast.
Hey, it's Nick, joined right off the bat by Gray Albright. Gray, welcome to, I guess, what we're calling now, Razzball Radio. How are you, buddy?
I wanted to announce a big surprise.
Okay, what's the big surprise?
I have an actual phone that gives decent audio.
But hold on, the story gets better, Gray. So we're sitting in here, and you know, we're figuring out, okay, you know, you sounded terrible last week. We always have issues with your cell phone. We're working on some studio equipment for you. Then you go, today you said, hey, do you want me to just get on my home line? So for a year, we could have had crystal clear audio, and we've been stuck with Gray in a bathroom stall.
Oh man, yeah. I don't know. I was watching this show National Geographic about how they put two plastic cups together using a string.
Uh huh.
It seemed like it made sense at the time, but maybe I should have just picked up my phone.
So great. It is arguably one of the most exciting weeks we've had at Razzball. We have announced the tour. We have announced Razzball Radio. We've got you on right now. We've got Jonah Carey coming up today, which is very exciting. He's been really helpful with everything we've been doing.
Oh, my God. The guy from Wolf of Wall Street?
No, Jonah Carey from ESPN in Grantland.
Okay. Well, we got the good phone. Maybe next year I'll start using my good ear.
That would be fantastic. So let's just really touch quick on what we're actually doing with Razzball Radio, because you know, we tried to keep the post yesterday, which went up at 2 p.m. Eastern on Monday, as brief as possible. You can always go to razzball.com and search Introducing Razzball Radio if you want to get the post information. But we'll just elaborate a little bit right now, fill people in on what's going on, what we're trying to do. So here's the deal. In case you missed the post yesterday, I am moving. I have sold my house in Toronto. The good people at U.S. Customs and Border Protection have granted me a work permit because I'm opening a business. And we're going to be doing Razzball Radio as a show every single day, Monday to Friday. Are you excited,
Gray? Can we break that down just a little bit? Let me just say this: that you, in what is arguably one of the worst economies in the history of the world, you quit your day job to do Razzball Radio and to move to a country that has a worse economy than where you were, to a state that doesn't even like immigrants.
I'm not an immigrant. I'm a guest worker.
Wait, so not only, so they don't let in people who actually do work, but they let in people who are saying, quote unquote, they're going to do a online radio show? Where immigration is totally messed up. I gotta talk to someone in in City Hall in Arizona. I need to have some sort of conversation about this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So here's how we're going to do the show.
Maybe during our 5-day radio show, we could just call up City Hall and explain to them what you've done and why exactly did they let you into the country.
I don't know if City Hall would be the right jurisdiction, but I'm just guessing. I don't know enough about the good old U.S. of A. yet.
You know what, Nick? First of all, we have 5 days a week to do Razzball Radio. We can start at City Hall and work our way to the actual person we can talk to, because we're going to have a lot of time to fill.
Okay, so what I'm coming in on is an investor visa. So, you know, really, we put it in the video yesterday, but I really did sell my house. I really am fronting this. I've bought a 2014 Mercedes-Benz Sprinter. We're putting a digital studio into it, and we're going to do audio and video every day. We've been picked up by the Fantasy Sports Network. You can find them at fantasysportsnetwork.com. Obviously, they think we're pretty enough to be on TV after we released the photo of you and Rudy yesterday. So that's very exciting. And what we're going to do, and this we want to do specifically because at our core, I think Razzball, it's fair to say, is you know, a fantasy baseball site at its core. So what we're going to do is the show is going to be available every single day at razzballradio.com. You're going to get the video and the full audio show there. You can subscribe to either. But here's what we're going to do just for the fantasy baseballers. We're going to rip the audio when we're talking fantasy baseball. If we're talking football or something else in a different segment, you don't have to subscribe to that. If you just want pure fantasy baseball, during baseball season, we'll probably have a little podcast up every single day. There's going to be lots of Gray, lots of Rudy. And another thing we're going to do, we're trying to put this into capsules for you to make it as easy as possible. When we do have our daily shows, we're going to start right at the top with what you need to know for that day for fantasy baseball. From there, we'll get into the silly shenanigans that you and I often get into together.
Sounds good. I guess I should have known about this stuff before we got on the phone call, but that's interesting. No, I'm joking. I've heard this before.
Well, I hope you have, because all of this also has happened since mid-October. My wife and I were down in Florida on vacation, and we both used to work on cruise ships. By the way, working on cruise ship sponsors, I want travel to give away here on this tour. And the idea just spawned by mid-November, let's do Razzball Radio. I have put all this together with lots of help from you and Rudy, and especially too, I want to give a shout-out to Jay Ron, the new football writer. So there's still some stuff up in the air, but we've pulled this together. I flew down literally when I had the idea to L.A., met with you to pitch you, and I snowballed you. So you said yes. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, I would watch. You're still using Canadian colloquialisms when you say snowballed someone, I think. I don't think you're using that in the American.
What should I say? Pulled the wool over your eyes?
Yeah. Snowballed is probably not. Actually, though, that gives me an idea. So if this doesn't work out with the tour, we're going to have a Mercedes van and audio and video equipment. Now, if we could somehow start doing movies, quote-unquote, in the back of this van, we may be able to afford this tour anyway.
You are based in L.A.
All we do is drive to the valley.
Okay, so real quick on how the tour works. There are 100 spots available in each city. The reason we're doing it that way, Gray, is because I'm negotiating with craft breweries. Basically, the locations are to be determined, but they will be in the downtown core of the cities. We're going to have that information real soon, but I'm really pushing to get swag, good quality swag for the Razzballers. So what we're going to do is tickets are $15 a piece, but you're going to get, I can't say, you're going to get a couple of sparkling apples juice for your $15. But I'll put it to you this way. There's going to, the $15 is basically a placeholder.
Wow, this sounds so planned out. I can't get over the amount of planning that's gone into this. We're going to get possibly a cup of sparkling apple juice.
Okay, let me tell you how it worked here for the Razzball launch party.
Now, Nick, let me explain to the Razzballers real quick what's going on. We don't know exactly who's sponsoring us, so we don't want to say, oh, you're going to get a can of this beer because Nick hasn't yet sold the sponsorship. So later on, if you go back and you listen to this show in about 3 months, they're gonna loop over the name of the sponsor everywhere he says sparkling apple juice.
And here's the other thing, okay? I used to work in events, and sponsorship in events when I worked on the cruise line industry. So what I'm doing is I am hustling up major sponsors. And if everything goes well, Gray, what's going to happen, and I can't promise you this for legal reasons, but the plan is you buy your ticket, you show up, it's a rolling party. J. Rong is with me the whole tour. Sky's going to be on for a week. LT is going to be on for a week. You're going to be making appearances. It is going to be, excuse me, a rolling fantasy party. We're going to talk fantasy. We're going to compete in Razzball Commentator League's drafts. And in the next couple weeks, there'll be more information. But basically, how well you do in those drafts, there are going to be really good prizes. I'll give you a little hint. I am today, after this podcast, I have a conversation with a major sports tourism company. I want to go to NFL drafts with you. I want to go to the NBA draft with you. I want to take the listeners. Basically, it's going to be Nick's going. I need a sponsor to give me 2 airline tickets, a couple of hotel rooms, and tickets to the event. So I'm going to be on the road about 3 to 4 months a year. We're going to do the football tour every fall, baseball tour every spring. I'm also working on a hockey tour potentially for this year, but we're going to be out there. And also, you don't know this yet, Gray, but you're not a football guy, so we're using you a little bit on the football tour. But come baseball in 2015, I would just leave March open, okay? I'm just going to leave it at that. I know it's your busy time, but yeah. But we're
going to
have...
I'm going to be going to, for the football draft, I'm going to be going there, and we're going to have we're going to have Beat Gray at the, in a fantasy football draft.
I can't so get that many like, sponsors like on board.
Going against your 12-year-old niece.
Last part about the tour. And then we'll drop it on this. The reason you want to get in now and get one of those 100 spots, if you're one of the first 100 guys in for the $15, not only are you guaranteed your spot, but also you are going to become a VIR. That means very important Razzballer. There are only 3,200 places available for that. And that is always going to cut the line whenever we do an event in the future. So if you want to get in for, you know, whatever we're doing for baseball in March of 2015, you want to come to this because that is going to give you front-of-the-line privileges. I don't know if I can say that or if a credit card company owns that line. But basically, guys, I give you my word, you will always be front-of-the-line on whatever we're doing, and there will be extra incentives throughout the year when we're doing the show on a regular basis that are just going to be for the VIRs. So you know what? Come to this, guys. It's going to be very exciting. I'm flying Razzball writers all around the country on this tour. We're going to have a truck full of people. We're going to be partying like crazy, but we'll always have a designated driver.
Which will be, I'm going to say JB.
Big Biscuit? No, you know what, listen, I hope actually Big Biscuit comes out to the Charlotte event. I know he's in the Triangle, but he better come out to Charlotte because that's August 28th and that's my birthday. Excuse me, August 18th. That's my birthday. I should know that. So, JB.
You forgot when your birthday is? You know, Jesus.
Greg, you know this.
And this is who they let into our country, people.
Gray, you know.
They're doing the interview where they're like, okay, state your name and your birthday. All right, you got one of two, right? Let's move on.
You know what? You know that I have been working till midnight, 1 a.m. every single night. I've been getting up at 6 to get all this planning done. I've launched a lot of projects and companies before. I've never been as excited about something as this. This is not work right now. Launching Razzball Radio is the most fun thing I've ever done, and I promise you this tour is going to be a blast. So you better come out, Gray, and you better buy your tickets too. Yeah. I don't want to hear VIP list, okay?
All right. Will do, Nick. It was, hey, thanks for having me.
So what, you're out of here already?
Yeah, I'm leaving. Goodbye. Oh. I'm hungry.
All right, okay, I'll get you on a list. Hey, Gray, seriously though, really, man, I'm gonna say this for real. I'm not kidding around here. I want to thank you and Rudy very much for giving me this opportunity. I'm really excited, and we're gonna blow up Razzball right now, pal.
Yeah, we're excited too. All right, man.
Okay, buddy, get your tickets at RazzballRadio.com. Thanks, Gray.
The Razzball Podcast.
It's always a pleasure to have him on, but it's especially great this week with everything going on at Razzball.com. Jonah Carey of Grantland.com joins us now. Thanks very much for taking some time for us today, Jonah.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
So, Jonah, we're going to talk a lot of baseball here in just a second, but I might have to drop in and visit you in Denver when we come through on this crazy Razzball Radio 32 draft, 32 day tour.
I mean, if I'm not running around a book tour somewhere, absolutely, I'm happy to do it.
Don't worry, we'll hunt you down. So it is a big launch for us this week. We are launching Razzball Radio. We are hitting the road. Of course, you can get all the details at RazzballRadio.com. But since I got Jonah Carey on, you know we have to talk a little bit of Montreal baseball this week. And of course, Jonah, you just are in the process of releasing Up, Up, and Away, the history of the Montreal Expos. What was the project like?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to ask you. I mean, obviously, this is a bit different for you compared to probably most things you'd write about, only because I'm assuming there's a lot of passion involved.
Yeah, pretty personal, and I don't usually write from a first-person perspective, and there is a little bit of that in the book, too. Not a ton. I mean, most of it is reporting and talking to Pedro Martinez and Andre Dawson and so forth. But it does get into some personal stuff, and it talks about kind of me growing up as an Expos fan and going to games with my idiot friends when I was a teenager and all kinds of good stuff like that. It was really a ton of fun to do. The reporting was great. I mean, interviewing somebody like Felipe Alou was legitimately a moving experience. He was just so wise and had so many cool things to say. And it was really a lot of fun. A couple people have read it already, and kind of send me feedback. Some I know, some I don't know that well. And one guy who I've never met in person, but we communicated a little on Twitter, he said, that he liked, and I'm just, take it for what it's worth, but he said he could, there was so much, like you said, passion in the book that he's going to go buy four or five copies for family members and just give them out. Even if you're not an Expos fan, my attitude about this book is, if you read about anything that anybody's passionate about, Nick, if you loved ladders and you wrote a book about ladders, it'd be the coolest ladder book ever. You'd be like, all right, I'm going to read that. That's how I feel about this one. Even if you were indifferent toward the Expos when they existed, never mind 10 years later, I think people will dig it just because of that.
Now, you and I both grew up in Montreal, which for our American listeners is the epicenter of a hockey mad country. I gravitated towards baseball when I was young because the Montreal Canadiens always won and the Expos didn't. Hockey stars died to play for the Habs, but baseball stars had no interest in playing in Montreal. I'm curious, what drew you to baseball instead of hockey growing up in Montreal?
It's tough to say. Well, I mean, I didn't play hockey, but I only played 1 year baseball, too. So, I don't know. I just always liked baseball better. I mean, my clever answer is I say, well, the Habs used to win Stanley Cups all the time. When I was a little boy, so heck, why did they need me? The Expos needed me badly. But it's something about baseball just appealed to me more. Don't forget, Montreal is very cold, as you know very well.
Yep.
And going to the ballpark or to the arena, if you have a choice, you'd rather go in June, even if it's an indoor stadium and not all that great. You'd rather be leaving your house to do things than in December, January. I think that was part of it. Something aesthetically about the sport appealed to me. And I was also big into numbers, even as a little kid. I got my first Bill James abstract when I was 8 years old. So I think I just kind of had that baseball bug all along. And sure enough, my circle of friends from age five, I mean, through elementary school and high school, whatever, followed the Habs to some extent. But we really were Expos fans and baseball fans. That was always our first priority. So, combination of my peer group, my grandfathers were both into baseball. was sort of everything, and I really, it was always that way. I definitely supported the Hats to some extent, but I was much bigger Expos fan.
It's funny you say that, because it may have, your it's a mirror of my life, exact same thing I grew up with. One of the things as being an Expos fan that gets my blood boiling is, and it takes a lot to get my blood boiling, but when people say Montreal couldn't support baseball, it makes me a little nuts. And maybe I'm drinking the maple syrup flavored Kool-Aid, but I think of it more as Major League Baseball failed Montreal. What's your take on it?
Well, I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, I think it's a little bit of both. Here's the thing. I dispute the notion that the fans let down the team. If you go to a restaurant every time you go, the owner of the restaurant says, "Hey, there's cockroaches in the soup. Stop coming to my restaurant." You're going to stop going to the restaurant. And that really was what happened. There was an anti-marketing campaign after a while, and it really was, you know, objectively not the best place to see a ball game, and not close to anything either. I feel like if that stadium was downtown, even as crummy as it was, more people would have gone. East End was away from the population center for many of the people living in Montreal. So that was part of it. I will say this, though. You know, you can talk about the failure of MLB failing Montreal as opposed to the vice versa. Somewhat true, but I think that the corporate community in Quebec and Montreal absolutely failed the team. The way it came to be, Charles Bronson owned the team through the late 80s, and then he sold. That, and those were, you know, some of the glory years of the franchise. Claude Brochu takes over a large consortium of investors, and that consortium of investors consisted of some of the biggest companies in Montreal, Quebec, or Canada. We're talking about Bell and Canadian Pacific and Nesbitt Burns and all these huge companies from all kinds of financial, transportation, publishing, all these big, their Provigo was in there. And it just didn't really, there was no support from them. They all came in and they said, okay, here's $5 million. We're doing it. They couched it as if it was for charity. And that's it, you're on your own. So imagine if you're running any baseball team now and you have to do it based on 1991 estimates, you know. Here's the $5 million, you will never get more money. That occurred in 1991. That's no good. And so by the time you get to, you know, the 94th strike obviously hurt, but, you know, beyond that, just having no money to operate the team, by the time you get to the late 90s, it's a disaster. So, you know, this idea that it was the fans, or even that it was Jeffrey Laurier or Bud Selig or whatever, I don't really buy that. I think that it largely came down to the team never had an owner that was really committed to the franchise, really wealthy, so could absorb some losses until things got better. And by the way, the atmosphere for baseball is much better now than it used to be. Like, if the Expos existed now, they'd be fine because of revenue sharing and TV money and all these other things. But, yeah, you're in a situation now that it did change, but before it was just, it wasn't going to work. You needed somebody. You needed a billionaire to just go in and say, all right, let's do this thing, and nobody ever did. That, to me, was the biggest downfall of the franchise.
And I think one of the reasons you want to read this book, even if you have no ties to the Montreal Expos, is because of the passion. And unless you've actually lost a professional sports team from your city that you were tied to, I don't think people really understand what it's like. I mean, it really is having a part of you ripped away. There's a buzz right now in Montreal, thanks to the Montreal Baseball Project, to bring Major League Baseball back to Montreal. What would have to happen to make that a reality? Even though I think it's unlikely, but I'm curious your take.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's unlikely, too. 2 or 3 years ago, I would have said it's impossible. So at least we've upgraded to really unlikely as opposed to there's no chance in hell. you know, to me, it comes down to, I think people are fixating on the Montreal part of it. Oh, you got to get, like you talked about the billionaire, you got to get a new stadium. Those are huge obstacles, no question. But I almost think the bigger obstacle is for Major League Baseball, because what incentive does Major League Baseball have to go back to Montreal? If you have any kind of institutional memory, you'll remember that it was a disaster at the end, and they were losing money, and it was a black eye, and, you know, they'd have small crowds, and it was embarrassing for baseball. And so if you look at it from MLB's point of view, I think they would say, gee, you know, I'm not seeing a reason. And moreover, there has to be a mechanism that leads to a team going there. So number one would be a team moving. I really don't see that happening anytime soon. People talk about Oakland or Tampa Bay or whatever. Those teams are profitable. They'll work out their stadium situation. I just don't see it. And to me, expansion, which would be a great option, by the way, you'd have 32 teams if you expanded by two. Nice even in 16 teams in each league. You would have to have interleague every day, which I would really like. I'd like to get rid of that. But if you do expansion and you have a $9 billion industry, that means that you're cutting up the pie. you have to share that revenue that every team is getting. And I don't know that anybody, whether it's the Yankees or the Pittsburgh Pirates, are that interested in sharing their winnings right now. I think that they might just look at it and say, everything is great, let's not expand. So I don't say never. I think that it's possible. But I think there are a lot of obstacles, like I said, both local and from an MLB point of view.
What was the height of the Montreal Expos, in your opinion, before you started this project? And did that change during writing this book?
Well, you know, when they were really good in the late 79 to 83 or so, I was born in 74, so that's pretty little. Actually, my first memory is, my first vivid memory anyway, is Blue Monday, which you know what it is, for people don't know. A guy named Rick Monday for the LA Dodgers hit a home run in the ninth inning of the deciding game of the NLCS. So the Expos, you know, it's not for that moment, the Expos would have gone to the World Series. They never ended up going to the World Series their whole existence. But, you know, I didn't really appreciate it as much. But once you get to 94, I mean, that was my sweet spot. By then, I would have been 19 going on 20 that year. And really the height of fandom. I was going to Concordia. And a lot of my buddies stayed home for school. They either went to Concordia or McGill. So we all just would kind of go to the ballpark and have fun. And it was tremendous. And I traveled a bit that summer, too. I met a girl that February and I ended up spending summer with her in California. I ended up marrying her, which is awesome.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah. At the end, this is a segue, but you know, when the season was canceled, it was canceled, I think, on September 14th, I want to say, or something like that. And 6 days later was my 20th birthday. And for my 20th birthday, she bought me 20 gifts. And the 20th was a Felipe Alou rookie card. And the inscription, based or whatever, said, "You can't, I've given up on baseball. I said, I'm done. This is it. Like, I got screwed. I can't handle it." She said, "You have to try. You have to keep going," whatever. I literally am not writing about baseball today if not for that moment. I mean, it was absolutely, it just changed my point of view. So yeah,
you could tell she was a keeper.
She was a keeper. So yeah, so we would go to that summer. The Expos were so good and happened to coincide with this road trip where they went to LA and San Diego and all this stuff. So we went to see all these games. She was great. And there was a series. People don't talk about it that much, maybe because it was a road series. But they were playing in San Diego right before the All-Star break. And the Braves were very good. So they had to catch the Braves. They go into San Diego. I went to, I think it was three of the four games in that series. And the Expos swept the four-game series, passed the Braves on the last day before the All-Star break. And the final game of the series ended like 11-2 Expos. I think Cordero homered twice and Alou hit a grand slam or vice versa. And, I mean, it was a massacre. And it was one of those things that season where, you know, okay, they had the walk-offs and they had tight games, but this was just, we are just going to stomp on your head and that's it. It wasn't even that I was cheering, I was cackling. It was what I imagine a Yankees fan to be like, you know, during their dynasty or even in the 50s or whatever when they had Mantle and all these guys. They were just unbeatable. It was just no way that you were going to have anything get in the way of it in my mind at that moment. And so I think that beautiful Sunday afternoon in San Diego in a way stands out as one of the biggest highlights for me. And I got into it a bit in the book. Again, not really something that Expos historians, not that there are many of us, talk about, but, you know, that was really, really a memorable series just because it showed how dominant that team had become.
And I can completely relate when you say something about giving up on baseball, because when that strike happened, I gave up on baseball actually for 12 years. Yeah, I did. And, you know, the Maguire-Sosa home run chase before we knew what we know now didn't pull me back in. It was actually about 8 years ago, a friend of mine said, "Hey, why don't you play fantasy baseball? Just give it a shot." And that was the thing that pulled me back in. But it was 12 years where I said, "Forget this." It was all football for me. So again, I can completely relate to a statement like that. And again, you can't understand that unless you've lost your team.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think there were other people that were disenchanted, certainly by you know, just the whole strike and everything going wrong. But by the same token, you know, it was different. It was, okay, well, if I was, we can rebound, we could do better. And some of the teams that were, you know, the Yankees, for instance, were in very good shape, and they ended up becoming even better. And obviously other teams turned it around. It was just, that was it. That was a death knell for the Expos.
Absolutely. A couple more questions about actually writing the book. What former Expo, because you have everybody in there, I'm actually surprised how many former players and management types you were able to get for the book. What former player was most helpful when doing your research for Up, Up, and Away?
Oh, there were a lot of them. I really enjoyed all the interviews. One guy who, I just didn't know how good it would be with Cliff Floyd. Cliff Floyd was phenomenal, and he's kind of become one of us. He's become a little bit of a media guy. He does hits at various places. He does some stuff for MLB Network and some other places. And he was so good. We had breakfast in Miami. I felt that the in-person interviews were better than phoners, which is, it makes a lot of sense if you think about it. And I was in Miami. I was going to interview David Sampson that week. And, you know, to get that kind of point of view about what everything that happened then, Floyd lives in Miami. So we went for breakfast. He pulls up in a Bentley, and I'm like, oh, wow, okay, it's going to be like this. Which is just, you know, serves me right for a book by its cover, by the way. He was, not that wealthy people, by the way, cannot be nice, but he was beyond nice. I mean, he was wonderful and insightful. You know, he really told stories, again, with passion. He had this horrible wrist injury in 1995. And he told it, and he's recounting his painful rehab. He couldn't move. It was excruciating. And he's in tears, and I'm in tears. And this is in the middle of this, you know, well-lit Miami diner in a strip mall with people around. And he's telling this story. And it was something, you know, and he just really had so much insight. Honestly, a lot of that stuff didn't even go in the book because I couldn't find quite the right spot for it. It just didn't really fit with the narrative. But, you know, that was the thing about doing these interviews. Number one, it was personally fulfilling just to be able to have these conversations. But number two, even if it wasn't directly quoted in the book, I felt like it highlighted my own sense of what's going on. It really gave me an idea of, oh, this is what the people were like. Not the guy hit 287 that year. It's here are the stories, here are the people. And when you read the book, even though I have a reputation of being a statsy guy, I guess, it's not a statsy book by any means. This is just it's a story about stories. It's a story about everything that happened and the people that were involved and them telling those stories. And, you know, it's really everybody's in there. I mean, I really can't think of a major person who wasn't represented in this book. I did get Samson instead of Loria, but I mean, that's basically the same thing. And everything else was name a player. You know, Carter, I didn't talk to during this round of interviews, but I've interviewed him a few years back for another story. So I used some of those quotes. Reigns, Dawson, Pedro, all the way back to Rusty Staub and those guys. I talked to the guys at the beginning. I talked to Felipe Alou, and I talked to Jim Fanning, and Charles Bronfman was the very first interview that I did, the original on the team. He's in great shape in his 80s. I went into his office in New York, and we had a great talk. So it's everybody, and you're going to get, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. There's no punches pulled, despite the fact that I'm a big Expos fan. I definitely turn a magnifying glass back on whatever, myself, my own city, and all that stuff, just to suss out the truth, and I think that it does that, too. So, you know, it's weird. It's sort of a combination, serious, rigorous work of journalism, I think, and just being really personal. And I think that hopefully both of those things are reflected in the book.
Yeah, absolutely they are. It's a great read. And you know what, it is fair. I think you are known for your stats and analysis, but this is a book of stories. And when I first picked it up and started to flip through it and read it, I realized that right away. It really came through. Last question I got for you. I'm moving to Phoenix to do Razzball Radio now. I'm a little bit worried about leaving my adopted Toronto Blue Jays here let's just say current ownership hands. Are the Blue Jays going to be safe, or are they on death watch as well?
Oh, I don't think they're on death watch at all. You look at, to me again, it comes down to ownership, and Rogers is Rogers. I mean, now I just finished telling you that how Bell and all these companies failed the Expos, but you know, those companies did not put in money. Rogers absolutely supports the Blue Jays financially. So, yeah, I don't see this as a problem. Toronto's a much more vibrant market than Montreal, a bigger, more money. Just, it's a different story. I mean, this is, the fifth biggest market in North America or something. So, things would have to go pretty wrong for that to happen. And like I said, conditions have changed a lot. Canadian dollar is better. Revenue sharing is better. Everything is better. So, I would not sweat it with the Jays by any means. I think they're fine, and hopefully it'll start to translate into some winning seasons. Obviously, they haven't made the playoffs by 93, but the infrastructure is there. There are smart people running the team, and the hope is that it turns around.
So, Jonah, I got my version of Up, Up, and Away at Amazon.com. I got the Kindle edition. Where else can we find the book?
Yeah, you can pre-order it in a bunch of places. If you're listening to this on the Canadian side of the border, you got Amazon.ca and Indigo Chapters. And in the States, Amazon.com works. BarnesandNoble.com, Powell's. Powell's a great indie bookstore. People want to order it from there, that's fine. And there are all kinds of versions. You can get the e-book. And there will be books in bookstores. There will be an actual book that you can go into the shelf and you can buy it as well. But we're encouraging people to pre-order such as it is. Then you know that it's in your hands. on Pop Date, which is Tuesday, the 25th of March. And, yeah, pre-orders are always fun. But, heck, if you want to go down to your local bookstore next Tuesday, then go ahead and do it. It's called Up, Up, and Away, and I think you will really like it. I will come to your house and cook you dinner if you don't like it. How about
that? Jonah, do you have a book tour scheduled?
I do. I'm going to, I've already done some of it, actually. I was in L.A. That was mostly for media. I did some podcasts. And I am leaving for Toronto tomorrow. I'll be there for 5 days. Montreal for a week. And, you know, there's this whole debate about how luck or fate or whatever comes into play. I'm kind of not a big believer in superstition. But it's just a fact that I've had things go my way with this book tour. You know, I signed this book contract 3 years ago. And since then, there's been this huge arrival in the Expos. And now, of course, there's exhibition games. The Mets are playing the Blue Jays at the Big O on March 28th and 29th, 3 and 4 days after my Pub Date, with, you know, 80,000 people in the stadium over the course of 2 days. And I'll be there that weekend. I'll be doing all kinds of signings and stuff. So, yeah, the stars have definitely aligned for this one, and I'm very excited about that. Then afterwards, I'm doing New York. I'm doing Dallas. I'll be here in Denver. I live in Denver. And then there's one hit in particular that's pretty high profile. I wish I could announce it, but I can't until Wednesday. But that'll be a big one. Very atypical for a typical baseball stats dork. It'll be a lot of fun when people hear about it.
All right, good stuff. Actually, if you shoot me the tour details, we'll post it at rasball.com. Jonah, I really appreciate you joining us. You've been very helpful to us and part of our success with getting Rasball Radio on the ground and turning this into a full-time traveling sports, fantasy sports, tourism show. You've been really helpful. We do appreciate it. Go out, get up, up, and away. Jonah, thanks very much.
Thank you, and good luck, Nick. I think you'll knock it out of the park.
I'd like to say an extra special thank you to DraftKings.com and SportsVault.net for believing in us from the beginning. They were the first two companies to get on board with this. We really appreciate it. We could not do it without them. Of course, you know DraftKings.com are very good friends. But also sportsvault.net, if you play fantasy sports and you commission a league or your commissioner is always having problems collecting the fees, sportsvault.net is an absolutely no-fee free service for collecting league dues and redistributing them. There are no strings attached. I've had a lot of people I've had a lot of potential sponsors come up to me. I'm only working with good quality people. I vet their products to the best of my abilities. SportsVault.net, you need to use those guys if you commission leagues. Thanks so much. Follow us at RasballRadio.com. The tour is going to be nuts.